the sages killed offensive King Vena after trying to advise him, or rather, after trying to get him to take their advice. And he remained blasphemous, was considering himself the supreme, and he would not follow either the Vedic scriptures or allow others to perform their duties and perform sacrifices for the pleasure of the Lord. And therefore, they could not tolerate his remaining in that position and turning the world into what?
Ashes.
Burnt by the sinful activities of him and the citizens who would become irregular and not follow any prescribed duties. So, after the king was dead, was the result wonderful? No. Thieves and rogues began to plunder the citizens. And when people's minds are not peaceful, they cannot properly prosecute their spiritual duties. So the sages again decided to make an adjustment. And the adjustment they decided to make this time was quite wonderful. They began to churn the thighs of the dead body which had been preserved by Sunita, the mother of Vena. And from this body, which was, although had some sinful elements, it was nevertheless within the seminal line of Dhruva Maharaj. So therefore it was very powerful. So from that body, the sinful reactions were released in the form of a nishada, a sinful person who was sent to the forest to live by thievery and thereby dissipate the sinful reactions that the king was carrying. And then, which we'll start reading right now, they begin to churn not the thighs, but the arms of King Vena. And the result was what we'll hear right now. My dear Vidura, this is Maitreya Muni speaking, thus the brahmanas and the great sages again churn the two arms of King Vena's dead body. As a result, a male and female couple came out of his arms. The great sages were highly learned in Vedic knowledge. And when they saw the male and female born of the arms of Vena's body, they were very pleased, for they could understand that the couple was an expansion of a plenary portion of Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this expansion was the Adhiraj, a soul, a jiva soul, not a Vishnu tattva, but who was Shaktavesh. The power, the Shakti of the Lord had entered within him, of Lord Vishnu had entered within him. So he was specifically empowered to perform a specific function. And we're going to hear of how he ruled, because this is the rulership of Krishna, more or less. Because through Prithumaj, Krishna exhibited all the potencies and attributes of a perfect king. So the sages were so happy to note that the symptoms of the Lord were present on this personality who they've just produced from the body of Vena, because their mission was successful. The Lord had come. The great sages said, the male is a plenary expansion of the power of Lord Vishnu, who maintains the entire universe. And the female is a plenary expansion of the goddess of fortune, who is never separated from the Lord. Now Prabhupada, in his purport, takes the opportunity to push a very, very, very strongly a preaching point how the goddess of fortune is never separated from the Supreme Lord Narayan. Purport. The significance of the goddess of fortunes never being separated from the Lord is clearly mentioned herein. People in the material world are very fond of the goddess of fortune, and they want her favor in the form of riches. They should know, however, that the goddess of fortune is inseparable from Lord Vishnu. Materialists should understand that the goddess of fortune should be worshipped along with Lord Vishnu and should not be regarded separately. Materialists seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune must worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi together to maintain material opulence. If a materialist follows the policy of Ravana, who wanted to separate Sita from Lord Ramachandra, the process of separation will vanquish him. If one tries to avoid the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, separately from Lord Narayan, as if oneself was the Supreme Lord, because opulence belongs to Krishna. So if one tries to push Krishna out of the way and use opulence for oneself, like Ravana made that attempt, and the result was that he and his entire dynasty was vanquished. Those who are very rich and who have taken favor of the goddess of fortune in this world must engage their money in the service of the Lord. In this way, they can continue in their opulent position without disturbance. Now going on again, Maitreya is describing about these two that were just produced, the Prithu Maharaj and Archie, who was not, as Prithu Maharaj wasn't the Vishnu Tattva, Archie was not Lakshmi Tattva, but she was also an empowered individual, empowered in a parallel fashion to Prithu Maharaj. Of the two, the male will be able to expand his reputation throughout the world. His name will be Prithu. Indeed, he'll be the first amongst kings. The female has such beautiful teeth and beautiful qualities that she will actually beautify the ornaments she wears. Her name will be Archie. In the future, she will accept King Prithu as her husband. In the form of King Prithu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared through a part of his potency to protect the people of the world. The goddess of fortune is the constant companion of the Lord, and therefore she has incarnated partially as Archie to become King Prithu's queen. So both are Shaktadesh avatars. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Viduraji, at that time all the Brahmins highly praised and glorified King Prithu, and the best singers of the Gandharva Loka chanted his glories. The inhabitants of Siddhaloka showered flowers, and the beautiful women in the heavenly planets danced in ecstasy. Conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums vibrated in outer space. Great sages, forefathers, and personalities from the heavenly planets all came to earth from various planetary systems. The universe was joyful because the Lord had invested his power in an individual. In other words, he was present through his potency. Lord Brahma, the master of the entire universe, arrived there accompanied by all the demigods and their chiefs. Seeing the lines of Lord Vishnu's palm on King Prithu's right hand and impressions of lotus flowers on the soles of his feet, Lord Brahma could understand that King Prithu is a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
One whose palm bears the signs of a disc as well as other such lines should be considered a partial representation or incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada in his purport explains that just as Lord Brahma recognized the presence of the Lord through the symptoms that he possessed, the markings on his hands and feet, similarly, one should not accept an individual as an incarnation blindly. There has to be symptoms, either shastric symptoms that he is specifically mentioned as incarnating, or other symptoms in his body, such as the marks, the markings that Prithu Maharaj had. Because nowadays, someone produces what is the most famous example, some bhajna of all things, and they have vibhuti ash, and therefore people will consider that he is Bhagawan or the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada had no qualms about condemning such false incarnations as rascals, as cheaters, as demons. He was very bold in this way. Very bold. Demons. One time he was asked, what would happen if someone sincerely is a follower? He's very sincere, but he's a follower of such a person who is a fake incarnation. And Prabhupada replied, such a person will go to where the person who he's worshipping is going. And that person is going to hell. In other words, sincerity is not sufficient. There must be knowledge as well. So Lord Brahma confirmed, and the demigods confirmed, that this personality was indeed the Supreme Lord. Text 11. The learned Brahmins, who were very attached to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, then arranged for the king's coronation. So these are the great sages. People from all directions collected all the different paraphernalia for the ceremony. Thus, everything was complete. All the rivers, seas, hills, mountains, serpents, cows, birds, animals, heavenly planets, the earthly planet, and all other living entities collected various presentations according to their ability to offer the king. Thus the great King Prithu, exquisitely dressed with garments and ornaments, was coronated and placed on the throne. The king and his wife Archie, who was also exquisitely ornamented, appeared exactly like fire. What does it mean, they appeared exactly like fire? Yes, that's what I was thinking. It doesn't explain any more than that. But yes, brilliant, extremely effulgent. They themselves were so powerful, effulgent and powerful. And they were exquisitely ornamented in their dress for the coronation. And therefore, the experience of seeing them in there was completely awe-inspiring. The great sage continued, my dear Vidura, that's my Trayamuni, Kuvera, now we're going to hear a list of all the different presentations. Now, we heard some of the presentations from that were made. We didn't hear what they were exactly, but rivers and seas and hills and mountains and serpents, and cows, birds. Now we can imagine easily what cows made, the presentation cows made. Milk and milk products according to their capacity. And birds, what could they present? Feathers and singing. How about And mountains and hills, so many jewels perhaps. But what could serpents present? Anyone have serpents passing better than jewels? I don't know exactly. According to their capacity, abilities, they made their offerings to the king. So that perhaps gives us some hope that even if serpents can make their offerings according to their capacity, and rivers and all living entities, they collected their various presentations. So we can also, as individuals, make presentations to Krishna according to who we are as individuals, according to our capacity. Now here are some very notable presentations. Kuvera presented the great King Prithu with a golden throne, because Kuvera is the treasurer amongst the demigods. The demigod Varuna presented him with an umbrella that constantly sprayed fine particles of water and was as brilliant as the moon. Very cooling. Everything was cooling. The demigod of air, Vayu, presented King Prithu with two whisks, chamars. The king of religion, Dharma, who was, what was his relationship? He was the great-grandfather, presented him with a flower garland which would expand his fame. The king of heaven, Indra, presented him with a valuable helmet, and the superintendent of death, Yamaraj, presented him with a scepter with which to rule the world. Also here, Dharma and Yamaraj, they're differently delineated over here. Because in this world, Yamaraj, or death, rules ultimately. So if anyone has the scepter for ruling this world, it's Yamaraj. And that scepter, that sign of power to rule, was given to Prithu Maharaj by Yamaraj. Lord Brahma presented King Prithu with a protective garment made of spiritual knowledge. Bharati, Saraswati, the wife of Brahma, gave him a transcendental necklace. Lord Vishnu presented him with a Sudarshan disc, which was also a partial expansion of his own Sudarshan disc. And Lord Vishnu's wife, the goddess of fortune, gave him imperishable opulences. Lord Shiva presented him with a sword within a sheath marked with 10 moons. And his wife, the goddess Durga, presented him with a shield marked with 100 moons. The moon demigod presented him with horses made of nectar. And the demigod Vishwakarma presented him with a very beautiful chariot. Horses made of nectar.
How beautiful these descriptions are.
The demigod of fire, Agni, presented him with a bow made of the horns of goats and cows. The sun god presented him with arrows as brilliant as sunshine. The predominating deity of Burloka presented him with slippers full of mystic power. And what were those slippers full of mystic power? That's described by Prabhupada in the purport. That as soon as the king placed his feet in the slippers, they would immediately carry him wherever he desired. So power was invested in these slippers, mystic powers, to allow him to do that. The demigods from outer space brought him presentations of flowers again and again. The demigods, who always travel in outer space, gave King Prithu the art to perform dramas, sing songs, play musical instruments, and disappear at his will. The great sages also offered him infallible blessings. The ocean offered him a conch shell produced from the ocean. So The demigods, they invested him with specific potencies. There are, just like we heard yesterday, how that one Gandhava wished to reach perfection in his singing, so he was performing austerities for the pleasure of Saraswati. So the demigods have specific perfections they can award, and this is what tantrics. They try to accumulate many, 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 many different siddhis by different practices of austerities. And they gain powers by those siddhis, which are awarded from by the different demigods. And then, having been awarded those siddhis, they can use them to gain some influence within the material world. But Prithu Maharaj, all opulence came to him with no extra endeavor on his part, because all this was going to be used by him in the service of Krishna for the purpose of ruling. The seas, mountains, and rivers gave him room to drive his chariot without impediments, and a Suta, a Magadha, and a Vandi offered prayers and praises. They all presented themselves before him to perform their respective duties. So these three, the Suta, Magadha, and a Vandi, we translate them usually as professional praisers. They were brahmanas who could compose poetry. They could take the glories of a person and make it poetic, and then they would sing the glories of that person to the kings, specifically to kings. And the kings, they need to be in a particular mood of Ishwara Bhav, of great leadership. So when they would hear their glories, their mood would come up and they would be ready to assume their position of king. So these Vandis, these professional reciters, and the kings would award them with remuneration, some type of wealth, charity, and reciprocation for their praises. So at this particular time, these Vandis, they were going to start glorifying Prithu Maharaj and all the wonderful things that he was going to do. And indeed, we shall hear them of these, Krishna willing, in the next chapter, all the wonderful things that Prithu Maharaj is going to do. And then in the succeeding chapters, we shall hear about these wonderful things, not from the mouth of these Brahman praisers, reciters, but we will hear the narrations of Prithu Maharaj's activities. So the professional reciters step forward to begin to glorify King Prithu, who had just taken his birth in a very mystical, wonderful way, and who was just coronated, and he hadn't actually performed any activities yet. So when the Vandis stepped forward, the son of King Vena, he saw the professionals before him to congratulate them. He smiled. And with the gravity of the vibrating sounds of clouds, he spoke as follows. So we'll read the words of Prithu Maharaj. There are five texts here that go into the end of the chapter. And here, and this is Prithu Maharaj's response to the fact that he's going to become praised right now. He said, "O gentle Suta, Magda, and other devotees offering prayers, the qualities of which you have spoken are not distinct in me. Why then should you praise me for all these qualities when I do not shelter these features? I do not wish for these words meant for me to go in vain, but it is better that they be offered to someone else." So here is an empowered person speaking very, very gently and very humbly. O gentle reciters, offer such prayers in due course of time when the qualities of which you have spoken actually manifest themselves in me. The gentle who offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not attribute such qualities to a human being who does not actually have them. How could an intelligent man competent enough to possess such exalted qualities allow his followers to praise him if he did not actually have them? Praising a man by saying that if he were educated, he might have become a great scholar or a great personality is nothing but a process of cheating. A foolish person who agrees to accept such praise does not know that such words simply insult him. Like if someone says, because there are so many people who love to play football, and it's such a world crazed sport. So if someone would say, if you were a really great athlete, you would have been a good football player. And you're not a good football player. So it's an insult because you're not even a good athlete. So he's saying, how could you give these, how could you say, praise a person as if he had good qualities when he hasn't manifest them? That's actually an insult. 25. As a person with a sense of honor and magnanimity does not like to hear about his abominable actions, a person who is very famous and powerful does not like to hear himself praised. King Prithu continued, my dear devotees, headed by the sutta, just now I am not very famous for my personal activities because I have not done anything praiseworthy you could glorify. Therefore, how could I engage you in praising my activities exactly like children? If a young child says, oh, you're very, very, very wonderful, or a young child says, oh, you're very, very, very terrible, either way, it doesn't mean anything. So the praise or the criticism of children, they have no depth either way. So therefore, Prithu Maharaj is saying, for you to glorify me at this point is like the words of small children only. They have no meaning at all. Now there are, in Prabhupada's purports, to those texts, there are some simple and interesting points that I would like to read. Prithu Maharaj in text 22, he said very humbly, that you should not praise me, I have not done anything yet. You should take these words, you have spoken so sweetly, but the object of these words is me, and since I haven't done anything yet, I am not a suitable object, you should take those words and offer them to someone else. And Prabhupada explains in his purport, he takes the opportunity to criticize so-called incarnations of God, who aren't actually God, but allow their followers to say, oh, you are Bhagavan, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The offering of prayers, this is about a third of the way into text 22. The offering of prayers was certainly appropriate, for he was an incarnation of Godhead, but he warned that one should not be accepted as an incarnation of the Personality of Godhead without having the godly qualities. At the present moment, there are many so-called incarnations of the Personality of Godhead, but these are merely fools and rascals whom people accept as incarnations of God, although they have no godly qualities. King Prithu desired that his real characteristics in the future might justify such words of praise. Although there was no fault in the prayers offered, Prithu Maharaj indicated that such prayers should not be offered to an unfit person who pretends to be an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God. Although Prithumraj, this is text 23, a similar point. Although Prithumraj was factually an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he rejected those praises because the qualities of the Supreme Person were not yet manifest in him. He wanted to stress the one who does not actually possess these qualities should not try to engage his followers and devotees in offering him glory for them, even though these qualities might be manifest in the future. If a man who does not factually possess the attributes of a great personality engages his followers in praising him with the expectation that such attributes will develop in the future, that sort of praise is actually an insult. Demons without godly qualities should not accept false praise from their followers. Very strong. Okay, that's the end of chapter 15. Now what I would like to do is we'll begin 16 and perhaps we'll even complete it because it's quite a simple chapter. The great sage Maitreya continued, "While King Prithu thus spoke, the humility of his nectarian speeches pleased the reciters very much. Then again they continued to praise the king highly with exalted prayers, as they had been instructed by the great sages." So the sages, even though the king did not wish them to speak his glories, and he spoke so sweetly that everyone was pleased, but yet the sages, they push forward the suttas, the magadhas, and the vandis to actually praise King Prithu, because he was the Supreme Lord, a Shaktivesh avatar. But here is Prabhupada's purport, or the last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to the first verse. Reciters like the suttas and magadhas were confidently aware that King Prithu was an incarnation of the Personality of Godhead. Although the king denied such praise because he was not at that time exhibiting his godly qualities, the reciters did not stop praising him. Rather, they were very, very pleased with the king, although actually incarnation of God, was so humble and delightful in his dealings with devotees. In this connection, we may note that previously, it was mentioned that King Prithu was smiling, was in a pleasant mood while speaking to the reciters. Now, note this. Thus, we have to learn from the Lord or his incarnation how to become gentle and humble. The king's behavior was very pleasing to the reciters, and consequently, the reciters continued their praise and even foretold the king's future activities as they had been instructed by the sadhus and sages. We have to learn from the Lord how to become gentle and humble. We will either learn directly from the Lord by his instructions, or we will learn indirectly through the Lord's material energy as it crushes us for our pride again and again and again and again. So let us all try to learn the direct method. The reciters continued, "Dear King, you are a direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. And by his causeless mercy you have descended on this earth. Therefore, it is not possible for us to actually glorify your exalted activities. Although you have appeared through the body of King Vena, Even great orators and speakers like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot exactly describe the glorious activities of your lordship. We'll read the last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Very important point. Who remembers what the verse, what did these suttas and magdas say in that verse? If you can do it by memory, even better. How could we, thank you, how could we who are insignificant glorify you who is so great, when even the greatest of the demigods fall so short in knowledge, ability, and speaking your praises? It is our arrogance that we even make the attempt to speak your glories. We are so unqualified. Because you are so qualified. Here is the Prabhupada's purport, or the last paragraph of it. By glorifying the Lord with exalted verses, one becomes purified. Although we are unable to offer prayers to the Lord in an adequate fashion, our duty is to make the attempt in order to purify ourselves. It is not that we should stop our glorification because demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot adequately glorify the Lord. Rather, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj, everyone should glorify the Lord according to his own ability. So that same point again, according to our own ability, we should speak, we should make our offerings. And because our ability may be very limited, very, very, very insignificant, that does not at all mean we should not make our offerings, whether it be of our words or something else. Whatever ability we have, we should offer with that. Because everyone's ability ultimately is tiny and insignificant. But when we take whatever it is that we have and use it in Krishna's service, it is pleasing to Krishna. Patram pushpam balam doyam yomam bhakta prayatati tadaham bhakti paritam asnami paratapmana. And then when Krishna is pleased, then we are pleased. It purifies us. This will purify us. So what example did Prabhupada give? Oh yes, the last sentence in the purport is, if we are serious and sincere devotees, the Lord will give us the intelligence to offer prayers properly. He will help. So what example did Prabhupada quote of the person who said that everyone should glorify the Lord according to his own ability? Who did Prabhupada cite as an example? Prahlad Maharaj, yes. Does anyone know where Prahlad Maharaj said this? Yes. Right in the very beginning of his prayers. Because Nrisimhadev was present after killing Hiranyakashipu. And he was furious because Prahlad, his dear devotee, had been threatened so grievously by Hiranyakashipu, and all the demigods stepped forward, and even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they offered their prayers to quiet the Lord who was so angry. And still the Lord remained ferocious. Lakshmi Devi couldn't satisfy the Lord. So Lord Brahma was pushing forward Prahlad. You please speak to the Lord. You praise Him. You offer your prayers to Him. And in that way, when the Lord hears your prayers, He will feel pacified and His anger will cool down. We have no ability to do that. You go, Prahlad. You speak to the Lord. So Prahlad was thinking, how is it possible? These great demigods, Brahma and Lord Shiva, they're unable to satisfy Lord Nisringadev and cool his anger, and yet I'm going to do this? How is that possible?
So this is what Prahlad says. This is before what Prahlad says over here.
He fixed his mind and his sight.
This is from, by the way, the 7th canto, 9th chapter. This is text 7. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon the Lord Nisringadev with full attention and complete trance. With a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers in love with a faltering voice.
Prahlad Maharaj prayed, how is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words, although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness, then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified. One may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yoga power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Now, what's the significance of him mentioning Gajendra? He was an animal. Even an animal can please the Lord. How? Simply by devotional service and possessing great qualities with no bhakti. Because what does Krishna need from anyone? He's just requesting some bhakti. Bhakti paritam asnami. I will take that offering of a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. Is there any dearth of leaves and fruits and flowers and water in Goloka Vrindavan that Krishna needs someone here to offer it to him? He's Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Saviors. He has so many Lakshmi serving him. Prahlad continues, if a Brahmana has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a brahmana, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called brahmana, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in Himself. Therefore, when something is offered to Him, the offering, by the Lord's mercy, is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, now listen carefully to this example because I will ask you to explain it. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Now what is that example saying? Just like if you decorate your own face, then automatically, with no extra effort, the reflection of your face in the mirror becomes decorated as well. So similarly, we should not try to decorate the mirror independently. There's a proper way to decorate the mirror is by decorating the actual face. So similarly, the proper way for the living entity, who is like the reflection of the Lord, to become glorious and decorated with all good qualities, is that the Lord become glorified and decorated. And then automatically, the living entity becomes very, very beautiful. Now, what's the verse in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam that explains that the devotees become decorated with good qualities? Yes, yasya bhakti bhagavati kinchana. It automatically appears. The decoration automatically comes out. But one has to be a devotee.
Okay. So that was what Prabhupada was referring to when he said in his purport to text 2, rather, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj, everyone should glorify the Lord according to his own ability. If we are serious and sincere devotees, the Lord will give us the intelligence to offer prayers properly. So they continue. The Magdas, this is their preamble, this is before their actual explaining the glories of the Lord, they say, these first three texts. The third one is, although we are unable to glorify you adequately, we nonetheless have a transcendental taste for glorifying your activities. We shall try to glorify you according to the instructions received from authoritative sages and scholars. Whatever we speak, however, is always inadequate and very insignificant. Dear King, because you are a direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all your activities are liberal and ever laudable, ever praiseable. Purport. However expert one may be, he can never describe the glories of the Lord adequately. Why? He has unlimited glories. Nonetheless, those engaged in glorifying the activities of the Lord should try to do so as far as possible. Such an attempt will please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya has advised all his followers to go everywhere and preach the message of Lord Krishna. Since this message is essentially Bhagavad Gita, the preacher's duty is to study Bhagavad Gita as it is understood by disciplic succession and explained by great sages and learned devotees. One should speak to the general populace in accordance with one's predecessors, sadhu, guru, and shastras. This simple process is the easiest method by which one can glorify the Lord. Devotional service, however, is the real method. For by devotional service, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead with just a few words. So what does it mean when Prabhupada says devotional service is the real method of glorifying the Lord? What is the meaning of that? But specifically what it's referring to here, that the glorification of the Lord is meant for the Lord's pleasure. The preaching is meant for the Lord's pleasure. The chanting Krishna's holy names is meant to please Him. And then, if He is pleased,
then we become pleased. So what pleases him? It's the bhakti of the glorifier. So the preaching is done as an act of devotional service for the Lord's pleasure. Because he's unlimitedly glorious. We can't do it properly, but we can make our humble attempts. And if it's done for his pleasure, with his pleasure in the center, then that is the bhakti that pleases him. Without devotional service, volumes of books cannot satisfy the Lord. So many scholars who aren't devotees may write so many books about Krishna, but there is no true glorification of him for his pleasure, and therefore they are dry. Even though preachers, this is an interesting one, it's a long sentence, but interesting. Even though preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement may be unable to describe the glories of the Lord, they can nonetheless go everywhere and request people to chant Hare Krishna. It's all simple. So after this opening, by saying this is our great fortune that we're able to speak your glories, this is our great fortune. It is not for you, really. It is our pleasure, but we are doing it for your pleasure. Because it is, why should the living entity glorify the Supreme Lord? It's for his pleasure, okay, but why should a living entity glorify the Supreme Lord? Don't call out or you'll be sitting in the corner next time. Yes. No. But why don't we just save that question for a moment. But why should the living entity glorify the Supreme Lord? Why? Well, go out there and glorify the Lord, but why? It's hard. No one wants to hear. But why? Yes. Yeah, yes. I guess maybe one of those questions where I have something very specific in mind. Anyone want to guess what I'm thinking? Oh, there we're getting really close to the answer I'm thinking of. It's the nature to glorify. It's actually our nature, jivera sarup. Our form, our true nature, who we are, is meant to serve and glorify Krishna. This is our constitutional position. This is who we actually are. And therefore, when we glorify Krishna, we're in our natural constitutional position. And when we are, on one hand, if we're cut off from our natural constitutional position, then we don't get the benefit of that being in our natural position in relationship to Krishna affords us. The benefit is that we are connected with Krishna, and therefore we have the bliss, the natural constitutional bliss, which is our constitutional nature. Krishna is Satchitananda, we are also Satchitananda. It is natural to be engaged in Krishna's service. It is the most natural thing. It is the only natural thing in one sense. So therefore we see that the in Goloka Vrindavan, that when the cowherd boys are coming home after herding the cows, what are they doing? They're singing the glories of Krishna. what Krishna did when they were out in the forest. And that's how the residents of Vrindavan, that's how they know what Krishna's been doing all day long. Of course, Mother Yasoda sends people out every hour to find out. But the cowherd boys, they're singing, and then the glories of Krishna, they compose, they make Krishna's pastimes. He killed this demon, he did that, he did that. They convert it into poetry, and they play their flutes and they sing it. And everyone hears it. All the residents of Vrindavan are just listening. Oh, what did Krishna do today? And then they pick it up and they begin singing about Krishna's pastimes. And then they talk to each other. Krishna did this and Krishna did this. Yes, and he did this and he did this and he did this. And in this way, this is the nature of Vrindavan, that everyone is engaged in talking about Krishna and glorifying him and singing his glories, his pastimes. Because they love him. Their love for him is so fully developed that it's the most natural thing that the words praising Krishna come out of their mouths. They can't but do that. But it's for us, for the words for Krishna, that us conditioned souls, we don't like the taste as it comes out of the mouth because we have jaundice. So the medicine is let the glories of Krishna come out in our ears and out our mouth. Shravanam Kirtanam. In the ear and out the mouth. That is the basic system. This is Bhagavat Mog, the Bhagavat Vidhi that we read about. This is the system, and as it goes in the ear and out the mouth, through the heart, because the heart is purified like that, and then the consciousness is purified. Chaito Dharpana Marjaram Bhava Mahajaravnina. And as the consciousness is purified, Shreya Karayu Chandrika Vataranam. And this is Vidyavaru Jivanam. This is the knowledge that naturally follows the holy name. Knowledge means love for Krishna. That is true knowledge, the life of transcendental knowledge. Okay, we'll stop here. I won't try to complete more than this. We'll just keep to the schedule. Thank you. What was your question, Prabhu? Yes. In other words, the essence of what you're doing is devotional, is the devotion, that you're doing it with devotion. It's seva. So we can also go and preach Bhagavad Gita in a completely different way too. So Prabhupada is reminding us of what the essence actually is. Because we should, if we forget the essence, we'll forget everything. For Krishna's pleasure. With devotion means for Krishna's pleasure. When Krishna says in the 18th chapter, one who preaches the Bhagavad Gita, is very dear to me. So the devotee thinks, let me preach Bhagavad Gita, not because that way I'll be dear to Krishna, because he thinks this is pleasing to Krishna. He wants these words of his spoken of, so it's pleasing to him. let me do something that's pleasing to Krishna, and that makes one very dear, because why is that pleasing to Krishna? Why is it pleasing to Krishna? Why is preaching Bhagavad Gita pleasing to Krishna? Yes, but not in the frame of reference that I'm asking the question. Why is it pleasing to Krishna that if we preach Bhagavad Gita? What is the essence of Bhagavad Gita?
Surrender.
Yeah, that everyone should give themselves and become Saranagati. That we should become the servant of Krishna. So that there are so many conditioned souls who are suffering in the material world, who are Krishna's aham bijapadapata, or Krishna's parts and parcels, his children, who are suffering so much. So if you take up the mission of reclaiming, of bringing the lost children back to the kind and gentle father, how pleased is the father is the father. That's why Krishna wants him, and that's why it's pleasing to him. So if we take it up in the right spirit, it's so wonderful. And if we can't take it up in the right spirit, we should take it up in the wrong spirit, because it's purifying anyway. But we should take it up. But we should, best is if we take it up in a devotion, in a mood of devotion. Devotion means that please be pleased by this. I'm doing this for your pleasure. Krishna is the center. That's Bhagavad Dharma. Instead of, oh, I'll become dear to Krishna by doing this, then even that, I'm in the center, if I'm thinking, you know, in that type of a funny way. I could, Maya has such a way of taking whatever Krishna gives us to elevate us and trying to turn it around. Just like the great devotees can turn the whole material energy into spiritual energy by using it in Krishna's service with purity. So we can take practically the whole spiritual energy and turn it into material energy by our mundane consciousness. So we try to avoid that. Yes, questions?
Is this the professional desire that has nothing to do with the problem?
No. These specifically, they were Brahmins whose business was to glorify the kings and their activities. And in reciprocation, the king would give them some charity. That's how they maintained themselves. Mentioned many times in the Bhagavad Gita. Yep. Excuse me? Prabhupada mentioned it in... not Vishnu Tattva, but... Yeah. He's a specific type... The word incarnation, of course, is an English word that doesn't quite fit the word avatar. So there are so many different kinds of avatars. And he was a Shaktavesh avatar. So that's an incarnation, a particular type of an incarnation where he's empowered. A jiva is empowered. So because he's a jiva that's empowered, it seems that he has certain indications of his empowerment that's even on his palm and legs, feet. So he is an incarnation, but not Vishnu Tattva incarnation, a Shaktavish avatar. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. So, Monday we shall try again. Srimad Bhagavatam ki